Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons, Text 44. Suyagya Navayam Shete Murayam Anushochat Yakshvotayo Nuva Vakteha Sana Drisheta Kariche Suyagya. King named Suyagya. Nanu, indeed. I am this. Shete lies. Muda, O foolish person. O foolish people. Yam. Whom? Anushochata. You cry for. Yaha. He who. Shrota. The hearer. Ya. He who. Anuvakta. The speaker. Iha. In this world. Sa. He. Na. Not drishita, drishita is visible, karhichit, at any time. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Yamaraj continued, O lamenters, you are all fools. The person named Suyagya, for whom you lament, is still lying before you and has not gone anywhere. Then what is the cause for your lamentation? Previously he heard you and replied to you, but now, not finding him, you are lamenting. This is contradictory behavior. If you have never actually seen the person within the body who heard you and replied, there is no need for your lamentation. The body you have always seen is lying here. Purport. This instruction by Yamaraj in the form of a boy is understandable even for a common man. A common man who considers the body the self is certainly comparable to an animal. Yes, yatma buddhi kunape tri taduke. Saeva gokara. But even a common man can understand that after death, a person is gone. Although the body is still there, a dead man's relatives lament that the person has gone away. For a common man sees the body, but cannot see the soul. As described in Bhagavad Gita, Deinosminyata Dehe, the soul, the proprietor of the body, is within. After death, when the breath within the nostrils has stopped, no one can understand that the person within the body who is hearing and replying has now gone. After death, when the breath within the nostrils has stopped, one can understand that the person within the body who is hearing and replying has now gone. Therefore, in effect, the common man concludes that actually the spirit soul is different from the body and has now gone away. Thus, even a common man coming to his senses can know that the real person who is within the body and who is hearing and replying was never seen. For that which was never seen, what is the need of lamentation? Translation again. Yamaraj continued, O lamenters, you are all fools. The person named Suyagya, for whom you lament, is still lying before you and has not gone anywhere. Then what is the cause for your lamentation? Previously, he heard you and replied to you, but now, not finding him, you are lamenting. This is contradictory behavior. For you have never actually seen the person within the body who heard you and replied. There is no need for your lamentation, that the body you have always seen is lying here. Srila Prabhupada is talking about the common person here, that the common person can actually understand that the soul is different from the body. But that doesn't mean that the common man necessarily knows what the soul is. Many people believe in the soul, but when you inquire from them what they believe in, many times they believe in the mind. They think that the soul and the mind are the same thing, or that after the body, the soul leaves, he enters into some kind of void, or he's in purgatory, or whatever. There's no clear understanding what the soul looks like, what the soul does, what the soul's activities are, nothing. But at least everyone can understand there's a difference between the body and who's ever animating the body, that's some kind of advancement. It's better than the gross materialists. Unkramantam titivapi unjana vagunan vitaha vimudo nanu pashanti pashanti jnana chakshusha. The foolish cannot understand how the living entity quits his body or what kind of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of material nature. But those whose eyes are trained with knowledge can see all this clearly. Generally, people are not trained at all with knowledge. As a matter of fact, if someone actually believes in the soul, it's considered to be unscientific, so-called scientists. Consider it unscientific to even believe that there's something that keeps the body alive. As if you combine hydrogen and oxygen and you get anger or fear or so many varieties. That actually, water potentially is fearful. If you take a knife to water, it becomes very fearful. Don't stab me. As they personify material elements and give it qualities of consciousness. Therefore, you should be very careful before you step into water because you might be insulting it. And in that way, they have so much speculation about what is actually going on. They don't see what's the difference between consciousness, the person who's conscious, and what they're conscious of. Just like now we're conscious of this body, and because we're conscious of the body, due to the false ego, we conclude, I am the body, because I'm conscious of it. In the same way, if one is watching a movie and becomes identified with the hero or the heroine, or even the villain nowadays. People identify sometimes more with the villain than with the hero in the movie nowadays. Then it doesn't mean that you become you may become a villain, but it doesn't mean you become the hero in the movie just because you're so absorbed in it. When something happens to the hero or the heroine, you start to cry because you identify yourself so much with it, but actually you have nothing to do with it. If the hero gains a million euros, you still have the same amount in your bank account. Similarly, this body, we're in love with it, we're attached to it, we're identified with it, and we actually believe that whatever is happening to the body is happening to us. But actually, the body may be put into difficulty, it may be declared a national hero, but it has nothing to do with ourselves. We're still the same, 1/10,000th the size of Tiferet size soul, floating in 10 different airs, completely ignorant of who we are, what's actually going on, and just imagining that we've actually gained something or lost something. Yes, indeed, the body gains and loses. At every moment, we're losing so much perspiration. But no one's lamenting, oh my God, my water, my body's going out. How can I stop this? I wish I could just get more and more water. We should drink water every day. But that doesn't mean that by drinking water the soul has gained anything, or if it doesn't drink water, it has lost anything. We may have so much money in the bank, but we're thinking it's our money. But actually we're not even control of the money in the bank. By Krishna's will, it could become zero in 5 seconds. As I mentioned when I was in Peru, the first time I went to Peru, there was what was called soles. And $1 was equal to one sole was equal to $1. But due to the inflation, different manipulations of the currency, by the time I left Peru the next year, there were 3 million soles to $1. Imagine you were retired, you were getting 300 or 500 soles a month for your retirement, and by the end of the year, your money was worth less than a penny. So you thought you had so much, you were getting so much, you may have been a millionaire, you had 300 million soles in the bank, you worked your whole life to get it, and now your 300 million soles is worth $300. And actually, not $300, $30. And there's nothing you can do about it. Not only that, but if you kept your money in the bank, what they did is they took away all the zeros. So the next year it was 3 soles to $1. But again, when I left the next year, it was again 300 million, 3 million soles to a dollar. So we can't even imagine if you were a millionaire and now you don't even have a penny. You probably owe the money, the bank money, for keeping your soles in the bank. And it didn't stop there. Then they changed the name of the currency to Incas. And the same thing happened. Obviously, people were getting a little disturbed. Because as soon as you got paid in Incas or in soles, you had immediately exchanged it into dollars. Because in between the time that you got paid that money, in between the time you exchanged it, you had lost a good portion of the money. So this is the same thing. We think we're this body, we think we have so many things, but soon it's going to be useless. Completely useless for us. Now there may be some value. If we sold our body, we could probably, and for the elements within it, I think they're worth around $7. But even if we sold our bodies and they extracted the elements, we couldn't collect the $7. And yet we think we're so valuable. Now, if there is false currency, counterfeit currency circulating in the society, then it's useless. But that doesn't mean that all the money circulating in the society is useless. Some of it actually has some value. So this body has a value when it's utilized in Krishna's service. But we cannot directly utilize this body in Krishna's service because we're not controlling anything. All we can do is desire. Now the question is, what are we supposed to desire so that the body is actually utilized in Krishna's service? So one has to desire to satisfy Krishna's desires. But how do we know what Krishna's desires are? We can only find out from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Now, without knowing Shastra, we won't even understand what Guru or Sadhu are actually saying. Because Guru and Sadhu are supposed to derive their knowledge from Shastra. So their reference point is Shastra. So without knowing Shastra, we don't know what they're referring to. And if we don't know what they're referring to, then we'll investigate whatever our memory is, whatever our standard knowledge is, and we'll refer it to that. Whatever they're saying, we're going to see from the point of view of our own reference point. And if it's not Shastra, then it must be ignorance. So if we don't learn Shastra, then the result is we'll wind up to be thinking incorrectly or inconclusively or not clearly what Guru and Sadhu is saying. And if we read Shastra and we don't know what Guru and Sadhu are saying, then we won't know what point of Shastra actually is relevant to us or to anyone else. So one has to study Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra as a reference to find out what Krishna wants us to do. And if we don't do that, then we're spiritually lazy. And if we're spiritually lazy, then the result is we wind up in we remain in the mode of ignorance, and we never really find out what real knowledge is. And although it may be so simple that the soul is within the body, the soul can only desire, and the soul only is not unlimited in its desires. It can only desire in terms of what's being presented to it. In other words, we're sitting here, and right now probably most of us are not going to desire to float around the room and fly. I hope not. Because it would be a useless desire. And I hope most of us are sane enough to realize that even if I wanted to do it, I can't do it. So why desire something which is unachievable? What would be the value? What would be the practicality of it? What would be for my benefit to live in a dreamland where I'm desiring something that's impossible? Now, if I really wanted to fly, I could go to the Himalayas and go to the mountains, if I could survive that long, and try to find a yogi who can teach me how to fly. But even if I could fly, then what's the value? Because for $100 or 200 euros, you could fly anywhere. Maybe not now, but in the future. So why spend years and years and years learning how to fly when you can already fly for just a few hundred euros? Similarly, we have to discern what actually desire is actually going to make my life better, improve it, and then desire that desire. But because it's not one desire, we have unlimited opportunities. Therefore, we have to learn how, under all different circumstances, what is the proper desire. What is the proper way of desiring, and how to figure out what the proper desire is? We have to learn the art of understanding how to discern what the proper desire is under different circumstances. And because we're not perfect, and because we're not realized, therefore we have to understand, we have to learn the process, we have to pick out what we think is the right desire, try it out. And if it doesn't work, then we learn something. It's not that I'm so fearful, I'm not going to do anything until I figure out what the right desire is, because we might be dead by then. So we have to try out to do the best we can, because none of us are going to stop. Krishna tells Arjuna, Nehi kaschit chenumamapi jatu tishtat yakarmakrit karyate yavasha karma sarva prakriti jargana. That all living entities are forced to act helplessly according to the three modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. So one of the things we should do is figure out how we can desire to at least get out of the material concept of life. Now, obviously, getting absorbed in eating, sleeping, mating, defending, either externally or internally, is not going to help our progress towards understanding that we're not this body. Although it may be so simple, yes, the soul goes away, and there must be a soul. But just knowing there's a soul doesn't mean that we know that who the soul is. We don't know what the soul does, or how the soul can get out of this ignorance. We can understand there's a soul, and that's very good, but then we should find out how the soul can get out of its ignorance. and become liberated. So of course, Hiranyakashipu, I don't think he's going to deal with those that subject matter. But at least he's saying, don't worry about Hiranyaksha. He's all right. The only people who are not all right are you, because you're lamenting over something uselessly, lamenting over Hiranyaksha, but you don't even know who Hiranyaksha is. Actually, he was a gatekeeper in Vaikuntha. No. Yeah, he was a servant in Ryan. Oh, my God. He was a traitor. Shh. Don't tell anyone. Get all the demons upset. Yeah, my brother was a devil agent. And I'm a devil agent also. And you're all devil agents. So that he doesn't go into, it spoiled the whole pastime. But at least he's trying to stop them from lamenting, because otherwise he'd run out of tissues. He couldn't afford it. Everyone crying all the time is disturbing. He tried to keep, calm down, my God. Let me get some sleep here. So he gives them the basic knowledge, which they agree to, which everyone can agree to, if you're half sane. If you're not opposed to sanity, which many people are, they'll actually argue with you day and night. Yes, this body is the soul. And when the body's dead, everything's dead. And when the body's alive, then the body's alive. That's very simple philosophy. As they said, in Africa, in South Africa, there is natives who believe that if you're alive, then you're good. And if you're dead, you're bad. So if I kill you, I'm good because I'm alive, and because you're dead, you're bad. So that confirms why I should kill you, because you're bad. So with such a logic, everything's possible. It gives you complete freedom to do whatever you like. Similarly, with the philosophy, without understanding actually who the soul is, how to find out the soul, just to know that the soul is not really very valuable, or where the soul goes to after leaving the body. But because they're demons, they're satisfied with even this insignificant amount of knowledge. And at least he'll pacify them. And then what he'll do? He'll go out to try to make his body immortal. Demons are not necessarily consistent in their in their approach to life. They may even be hypocrites. So after stopping that lamentation, now he's going to try to make his body immortal so he can rule over the universe, which is basically the only thing the demons are interested in, control and enjoying. And knowledge is only how to control and how to enjoy. All other knowledge is considered a waste of time. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. In this verse, Hiranyakashipu says that you have never seen Suyagya, this king Suyagya. So who are you? Why do you lament about somebody you have never seen? So it seems that it applies to everybody, that maybe devotees are seen a little bit because devotees are engaged in the activity of the soul. But otherwise, whatever character and nature one has would be a product of the three modes, and it's not the real person. So on one hand, we try to cultivate the eternal nature or revive the eternal nature. On the other hand, we also want to pay attention to our varna, ashrama, or psychological nature, everybody's character. So, why are we concerned with these temporary natures which exist only for a short time and it is not the real person?
Well, we understand when this nature is utilized in Krishna's service, it becomes spiritualized by contact with Krishna. There's a means of utilizing the material nature in such a way as to bring the soul in contact with Krishna. That if he controls his mind and senses properly with his spiritual intelligence coming from higher authorities, and the mind and senses are engaged in Krishna's service, then it makes it easier for him to connect with Krishna and Krishna consciousness, with the soul and Krishna consciousness. And if his desires are to utilize his senses and mind and intelligence in the service of material senses and false ego, the mind, then the result is he becomes more and more covered by the illusory energy. That's his reward for such activities. Material nature helps him forget more and more Krishna. And when he dovetails his intelligence, mind, and senses in Krishna's service, then Krishna, he becomes in contact with Krishna, and his false ego goes away. He realizes who he actually is. It's like electricity can be utilized to heat something or to cool it. It's utilized for this body and everything else. It's utilized for spiritual life. Then it heats the body into spiritual consciousness. And if it's utilized for sense gratification, it cools the consciousness of the soul and makes it more and more oblivious to reality. Yes?
In chapter 13, Krishna says that karya karana kartirta hetu prakriti ruchate purusha sukadukanam bhaktirta hetu ruchate, that causes, goals, and work are produced by prakriti, but the experience of happiness and distress belong to the soul or spirit. So how it seems a rather mysterious statement that the soul is the cause, or the
material nature. Material nature is the cause of all the different changes.
Changes, yes. Yeah. But the soul...
It's the cause of happiness and distress.
Cause of happiness, and the domain of the soul is happiness and distress.
Yes.
It seems rather mysterious.
You desire in the right way. For instance, if you're in the mode of... You desire the mode of goodness, then you get less distress. If you desire in the mode of ignorance, you get a lot of distress. According to the soul's desires, in the material world, he can get either relatively more distress or less. And if he desires in terms of spiritual life, then he can get real happiness. So it's up to the soul what desires he accepts. The soul doesn't independently desire, but by association, different desires arise within himself. And generally, there's an opportunity to choose if he's not completely in ignorance. Then he can choose either one desire or another desire. And they'll produce different varieties in the material world of distress, either more or less. And if he comes in contact with something spiritual, then he can desire spiritually and he can get real happiness. Anything else? Yes.
About seeing ourselves. We are bound with our faculties.
With
our faculties.
Faculties.
I mean, our perception goes through intelligence and mind. So how can conditioned soul, identifying with faculties, see himself as a soul?
Because we have intelligence. And the words of Bhagavad Gita are spiritual. So if we listen to them and we try to understand what they're saying, then they give us the faculty of perceiving them too.
But then that is a process. So we cannot approach a man, an ordinary man, and demand this realization. Because he cannot do it.
You can demand it wouldn't make any difference. You can do anything you want.
Because I am in a process for some time, and I have a problem with distancing, with direct experiencing of myself. Because everything I can experience is
faculty.
Well,
of course you can experience your real self. Because being in ignorance, we're covered. How can you? If you're in a dark fog, you can't see anything. The way of getting out of it is get out of the fog, and then you can see things. If you're in the darkness of a cave, you say, I read Bhagavad Gita, it said there's light outside. Then you have to go outside and see the light to understand what it says. So the Bhagavad Gita is a process.
But then it's far from simple. That's my point.
It's
because
not simple.
We are claiming it's simple.
I never claimed it was simple.
I mean, Srila Prabhupada said it's obvious and simple.
The process, in one sense, is simple for the simple and complicated for the crooked. So if it's not simple to us, it's because we're crooked. We don't accept simple things. And therefore, we have to go through the process, so it will help us become simple. If we're willing to become simple, if we want to remain crooked, then what can be done? Krishna says he's the enjoyer, he's the controller, but because we want to become the enjoyers and the controllers, therefore it's very hard to accept that Krishna is the real enjoyer and controller, and that we should be enjoyed and controlled by him. Because of our attachment to our false ego, everything becomes complicated. You know, we get some praise and we want to enjoy the credit for ourselves. Anything that happens to us, we want to control and enjoy for ourselves rather than for Krishna. Therefore, everything becomes very complicated. All right, thank you very much. Grandharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.